He seemed thoughtful on the way, and didn't speak till we got onto the road. Then he turned to me. "You know, Jim, it's all very well, but I've still got to confess the secret about that rear light. And of course I'll get the lash again. Don't you think it's a bit hard the way I get blamed for everything that happens to his cars? You've seen it over and over again. He gives me a lot of bloody old wrecks to drive, and when they start to falter a bit, it's always my fault. The bloody tires are all down to the canvas, but if I get a puncture, there's hell to pay. It isn't fair." "Well, Siegfried isn't the man to suffer in silence, you know," I said. "He's got to lash out, and you're the nearest." Tristan was silent for a moment. Then he took a deeper drag of his woodbine, blew out his cheeks, and assumed a judicial expression. "Mind you, I'm not saying I was entirely blameless with regard to the Hillman. I was taking that sharp turn at Dringley at 60 with my arm round a little nurse, but, all in all, I've just had sheer bad luck. In fact, Jim, I'm a helpless victim of prejudice." Siegfried was out of sorts when we met him in the surgery. He was starting a summer cold and was snuffly and listless, but he still managed to raise a burst of energy at the news. "You bloody young maniac, it's the rear light now, is it? God help me, I think all I work for is to pay for the repair bills you run up. You'll ruin me before you're finished. Go on, get the hell out of it, I'm finished with you." Tristan retired with dignity and followed his usual policy of lying low. He didn't see his brother until the following morning. Siegfried's condition had deteriorated. The cold had settled in his throat, always his weak spot, and he was down with laryngitis. His neck was swathed in vinegar-soaked thermogene, and when Tristan and I came into the bedroom, he was feebly turning over the pages of the Derby and Hulton Times. He spoke in a tortured whisper.
"Have you seen this? It says here that the golf clubhouse was knocked down yesterday, and there's no clue as to how it happened. A damn funny thing. On Prescott's land, isn't it?"
His head jerked suddenly from the pillow, and he glared at his brother.
"You were there yesterday," he croaked.
Then he fell back, muttering.
"Oh, no. No. No, I'm sorry. It's too ridiculous. And it's wrong of me to blame you for everything."
Tristan stared. He had never heard this kind of talk from Siegfried before. I too felt a pang of anxiety. Could my boss be delirious? Siegfried swallowed painfully.
"I've just had an urgent call from Armitage of Sorton. He's got a cow down with milk fever, and I want you to drive James out there straight away. Go on now, get moving."
"Fred, I can't," Tristan shrugged. "Jim's car's in Hammond's garage. They're fixing that light. It'll take them about an hour."
"Oh, God, yes. And they said they couldn't let us have a spare. Well, Armitage is in a bit of a panic. That cow could be dead in an hour. What the hell can we do?"
"There's the Rover," Tristan said quietly. Siegfried's form stiffened suddenly under the blankets, and wild terror flickered in his eyes. For a few moments, his head rolled about on the pillow, and his long, bony fingers picked nervously at the quilt. Then, with an effort, he heaved himself onto his side and stared into his brother's eyes. He spoke slowly, and the agonized hissing of his voice lent menace to his words.
"Right. So you have to take the Rover. I never thought I'd see the day when I'd let a wrecker like you drive it, but just let me tell you this. If you put a scratch on that car, I'll kill you. I'll kill you with my own two hands."
The old pattern was asserting itself. Siegfried's eyes had begun to bulge. A dark flush was creeping over his cheeks, while Tristan's face had lost all expression. Using the last remnants of his strength, Siegfried hoisted himself even higher.
"Now do you really think that you are capable of driving that car 5 miles to Sorton and back without smashing it up? All right then, get on with it. And just remember what I've said."
Tristan withdrew in offended silence, and as I followed him I took a last look at the figure on the bed. Siegfried had fallen back and was staring at the ceiling with feverish eyes. His lips moved feebly as though he were praying, Outside the room, Tristan rubbed his hands delightedly.
What a break, Jim! The chance of a lifetime! You know, I never thought I'd get behind the wheel of that rover in 100 years!
He dropped his voice to a whisper.
Just shows you. Everything happens for the best.
5 minutes later, he was backing carefully out of the yard and into the lane, and once on the Thornton Road, I saw he was beginning to enjoy himself. For 2 miles, the way ahead stretched straight and clear, except for a milk lorry approaching in the far distance. A perfect place to see what the rover could do. He nestled down in the deep, rich leather upholstery and pressed his foot hard on the accelerator. We were doing an effortless 80 when I saw a car beginning to overtake the milk lorry. It was an ancient, square-topped, high-built vehicle like a biscuit tin on wheels, and it had no business trying to overtake anything. I waited for it to pull back, but it still came on. And the lorry, perhaps with a sporting driver, seemed to be spurting to make a race of it. With increasing alarm, I saw the two vehicles abreast and bearing down on us only a few hundred yards away, and not a foot of space on either side of them. Of course, the old car would pull in behind the lorry. It had to. There was no other way, but it was taking a long time about it. Tristan jammed on his brakes. If the lorry did the same, the other car would just be able to dodge between. But within seconds I realized nothing like that was going to happen, and as they thundered towards us, I resigned myself with dumb horror to a head-on collision.